Welcome to the Mike and Scotty show, folks. Scott and I decided that since I'm the only one that can tell when we started recording, I'm going to do the intro.
It only took us like a year and whatever to figure that out.
But it doesn't take a house to fall on us.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. It's June, so welcome to the show, folks. And Mike was just saying it feels like it's been a while since we've recorded, but it really hasn't. I mean, we've been putting out these podcasts on a regular basis, but so much has transpired since our last podcast,
and we're going to talk about it's an extra week because you're an international globetrotter. So,
yeah, and we'll talk a little bit about that, but we're going to touch on all of those things in this hour or so. And I guess we want to kick it off with the good news, the trumpeting that the backhoe has shown up. And you're digging the space for the new addition to your house, Mike.
Yeah, it feels like it's been a marathon, and that's only because it has. I mean, when you've got something that you've been planning for over a year, and then you start at the beginning of April, and then when it's the beginning of June and you still don't have a whole heck of a lot going on yet, it can be a little frustrating. And what basically happened was the excavator became available, and he came by and did the trenching, and we got the foundation guy to come and put the footings in, and then nothing happened for like 2.5 weeks because he got tied up on other stuff. And, I kept hearing, oh, he's going to be there tomorrow. Oh, he's going to be there tomorrow. And I'd hang around, you know, because I wanted to make sure all was well. And then the guy would never show, you know, and that kind of doesn't wash with me.
No, I can't imagine it would.
Definitely some communication breakdowns. So nobody was happier about them finally showing up than Karen was, because she said that I would walk into the room and the atmosphere would darken.
Wow.
So, you know, I was trying to be good about it, but, you know, after, you know, once you get into the second week of that, I was starting to fume a little bit. I'm just watching. There's so much I have to do, you know, and so many things that I want to do that all revolve around this project. And we had all this great weather, and I was just watching the sands of the hourglass. You know what I mean? It was just, you know, not a good couple of weeks there. But they finally did show up, and I got to give them credit. They did a great job. This was not an easy pour by any means. And as far as we can tell, it was perfect. It was level, everything in the right spot. All the cuts were right. And, you know, it just came out great. So on Monday, the excavator came back, and I'd let him know once we had our inspection on Wednesday, and he said, well, I'll be there on Monday. And he came on Monday and apologized for being 2 days late, and I said, buddy, you have no idea. You're just fine with me, you know.
Right.
And he spent the whole day here with another guy, and there's a reason I waited for this guy, because, again, clearances are very tight here. And I had been looking at what was involved in backfilling this, and I was thinking, even talking to my builder, I said, I have no idea how this guy's going to do this, because I had dirt inside, I had dirt outside, I didn't see how he was going to get inside to do it. But this guy's a pro, you know, and he brought along another worker with a plate compactor and also a device called a thumper. And because he told me that's what they were going to use. And I said, what the heck is a thumper? He said, oh, you'll see. And it's basically, it looks kind of like a jackhammer. It's like a jackhammer and a pogo stick got married. And the unfortunate guy who uses it basically just tries to control this thing while it hops up and down on like a 1 foot steel plate to compact everything.
Yeah, and it's a tamper.
Yeah, but boy, does it look, you know, like not fun, but really effective, you know?
Yep.
And, you know, they put everything down in layers and compacted it, and I'm pretty confident I'm not going to have much in the way of unplanned settling, you know? And it was a major impact now to get all of this filled in, because it had been almost a month, really, of trench warfare out there with you know boards and planks and what have you just to get from point A to point B, and it was getting pretty old, you know, so just to have everything filled in and perfectly leveled off and basically ready to pour concrete there when the builder's ready, to have it like that was gigantic in terms of impact here. So they were here today. They put all the sills in. They put in the big glulam beams in between the house and the office building, where the roof rafters from one side of the construction are going to all be. And tomorrow, I think they'll be putting up walls.
Yep.
And of course, the other thing is, and I teased this on the podcast group, but some other stuff went on too, because with all of that time to think about it, I was thinking about it.
Okay.
And as I was thinking about it, I thought, okay, wait a minute. I was looking at the footprint, I was looking at some of the wasted space, I was looking at the about to be former oil tank room, and I thought, boy, it sure would be cool if I could use the former oil tank room too, because that's another 90 square feet. And all I'd have to do really is tunnel through the foundation wall of the house to get in there. And if I did that, that would totally alter, that would add about 25 feet of main line. It would give me the ability to model the Crestwood Industrial Park and Penobscot Yard at Mountaintop. And there's two really significant consignees there that I would love to have incorporated, but really had no place to do it. So I just created a whole room, and so I thought, hey, I've drilled holes in the foundation wall before. I did it for the oil tank, you know. So I went down there on Thursday morning and rented a core drill and a 1-inch bit. And I drilled the line for the oil line, which goes basically from the house into the new addition, and then to some conduit that goes, you know, out to an area in front of the building, the new building.
Yep.
Of course, when I got the rental thing back here, I went to hook it up, and the hose adapter wasn't in it. So I said, "All right," jumped back in the car, drove back to the rental place. Guy apologized, gave me the hose adapter. Came back here, hooked everything up, tried to start drilling, and the motor's going, but the drill bit's not spinning. So I called the guy. He told me, you know, there's a clutch there, see if you can engage it. And no amount of messing around with it would get the clutch to engage. Turns out it was broken. I came back, he checked it, he says, "Yep, sorry about that. Here's another one." So he gave me another drill, brought it all the way back here. I start drilling the line for the oil tank, and I'm thinking, boy, this is going very hard, very difficult to drill. I look at the drill bit, one of the three teeth has broken off.
Oh no.
So now it's the third trip back to the rental place, and the guy just looked at me and said, "You know, it wasn't broken when you took it." I said, "No, I understand that, but it's broken now, and I got to drill this hole." So I
Unbelievable.
took a 2-inch drill bit with me, and came back, and I said, and I said, "You know, it's time for me to start drilling the holes to make the passageway between the basement and the oil tank room."
Yep.
And you know, I drilled the first hole, and it was, you know, not the most fun I ever had, but hey, you know, I did it.
Yeah.
And I drilled the next one, and you gotta understand, there were 18 holes to drill. So when I got to hole about halfway through the fifth hole, I called up my contractor and I said, "What are you doing tomorrow? How would you like to come over here and save my butt?" So he shows up with his partner on Friday morning. I finished the sixth hole, and I am telling you, I felt like I had been to the rodeo as one of the riders, you know what I mean? Because, you know, the drill itself weighs 40 something pounds. It spits water all over you. It took me a good 20 minutes to drill each hole. You can do the math. Maybe 25 minutes as I was getting more tired. And When I called the guy, it was starting to get a little cool. I'm soaked to the skin and just filthy and standing in a quarter inch of muck, from all of the drilling. So, as it turned out, the first hole that they drilled for me on Friday, they were doing it in under 10 minutes, and I'm feeling like a real, slouch here.
Was it the same drill though? Same type of
Same
drill?
everything, yeah.
Okay.
But these were men.
Okay.
Guys who are physical doing this kind of stuff all day long, you know what I mean? So
Yeah.
think duty cycle. They had a much better duty cycle than I did. I had no trouble drilling a couple of holes, but I started to overheat already on the third hole, you know what I mean? So
Yeah.
these guys are used to working all day,
Yeah.
much different duty cycle. But
Sure.
I will say that when they got about, six or seven holes in, they were starting to wear down too. And these guys were tag teaming it, you know what I mean? So they could, you could have a guy that would step out and rest up while the second guy did it. Well, by the time they got to about that halfway point, what they were doing was they would have one guy hold the drill, the other guy would take a 2x6 and leverage one end of it on one of the studs of the room and press against the end of the drill. And having two guys leaning on the thing seemed to be the way to do it. In other words, I didn't have a chance of doing this. This would have taken me a week. So when they were done with the 18 holes, I said, "All right, guys, one more hole," because I wasn't happy with where my 1-inch oil line hole came out. It was actually low, and I was going to have to chop into the floor, and that wasn't a good moment either when I realized that. So I made a little piece of wood for them to align it, and now the three of us drilled that hole with one guy running the drill, one guy on a shovel leaning against the back of it because this was like at ground level outside, and I would be putting 2x4 shims in between the shovel and the drill and holding the extra handle on the drill so the guy running the drill wouldn't get killed if the thing caught, So that took three guys to drill that hole. But I would say I got my money's worth out of that rental because the guy basically took mercy on me and only charged me an extra $30 for using it for 2 days, He felt bad about me having to go back and forth, So he was being very fair about it. Probably wouldn't have been the same experience had I been renting it from Home Depot, So that was so that's and I posted a little video of it on my YouTube channel. So anytime you'd like a chuckle, you should check that out. The link is on the podcast group.
I actually had a chance to look at it the other day, and I thought, it was very reminiscent. When I built the addition onto my house, I needed some way to run the main line into the new part of the basement. And the most feasible way to do it was to cut a small quote unquote hole through the 8-inch thick concrete.
Yeah, a small hole through concrete is a hole that somebody else is making.
Exactly. So, I figured, how hard can this be? Well, the first thing is that the older concrete is, the more cured it is, and the harder it is, and the more difficult it is to drill through. So,
How do you think my 30-year-old 10-inch thick wall concrete was?
it was as hard as concrete can get.
Exactly.
I had borrowed a hammer drill and started the process. And I got about halfway through the first hole, and I thought, this is for the birds, and I needed to drill nine holes.
Right.
So,
How big were the holes you were trying to drill?
well, it was probably an inch and a quarter bit.
Okay.
But about halfway
And
through
with
the
that, you
second,
had a dust problem too.
oh sure, but halfway through the second hole, the tip of the bit broke off.
Sounds all very familiar.
Yeah, so that was a problem. So anyway, to make a long story short, I was talking to Dick Elwell one night, and I said, "This is just nuts. I'm not. It's taking me forever to do this, and I'm not getting anywhere."
Right.
I said, "I've got, basically all the holes drilled at this point, but the spaces in between, I need to do something." He said, "Just get a stonemason's chisel and a 3-pound sledgehammer." I said, "Come on, that sounds way too easy."
That's man's work.
He said, "I'm telling you." He said, "You won't believe how fast it goes." So at that point, I thought, "Well, what do I have to lose?" I went downstairs, found my father's old stonemason's chisel and a 3-pound sledgehammer, and in 5 minutes, I had the rest of the hole broken out.
Are you kidding me?
No, couldn't believe it. So,
Well, where were you when I was planning all of this? Gee.
laughing. unfortunately, it's probably we should probably consider it one of those rites of passage.
Yeah. Card carrying nutcase, basically.
Yeah, and of course, everyone that came down into my basement said, "What the hell are you doing?"
Right. I mean, the
So,
one good thing about using the core drill was there was zero dust, you know?
yeah.
But if you want to count being drenched with gray drilling mud, a better alternative. I think it probably was, but you couldn't have told me that day.
Yeah. So where does the exterior of this thing stand at this point?
Of the building.
Yes.
Well, like I said, they were putting the sills down today. They've got the main beam connecting the houses, and by tomorrow they'll be putting up walls.
Excellent. Okay.
And
Well, that
I couldn't be more excited about it, to be honest with you. I'm really like a little kid with it, you know, like every day I have to resist not just hanging around pestering them with questions.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're making progress, and the good news is that you're doing it in the good part of the year weather-wise.
Well, we do have a remarkable stretch of good weather right now, and coming up really for the next 10 days, just a shower that whole time. So I fully expect to make massive progress. I believe I'll have an enclosed shell largely in place by the beginning of next week.
That'll be fantastic. It
That's
never goes by fast enough.
well. You know, I mean, I feel like I've been planning this for a long time because I have,
Yep.
and that's fine. But now that it's actually happening, I just want it moving along. You know,
Sure.
I need to get on with it. You know, there's things to do with it, and everything is kind of in a little bit of a state of turmoil. You know, so until it's in place, well, that's the current status, turmoil.
Yep,
It's
absolutely.
baked in. I mean, I knew it was part of the project, but what I hadn't factored on were the degree of, you know, the crummy spring we had, and the unnecessary delays that, given all the circumstances, were inevitable. But I wasn't like mentally prepared for the worst case scenario in that regard.
Yep. Well, we'll look forward to next month's installment, and hopefully the news keeps getting better and the progress keeps moving forward.
Should be big, I think.
You've got a news announcement regarding Monster Model Works.
It's probably only newsworthy to you because you were off the continent, but
That's true.
Jimmy announced that he is no longer going to be doing Monster Model Works.
Okay.
He's—it's not that the business is going to go completely away. He's got many interested parties, and he feels that there'd be no circumstance where there won't be the product line in the future. But he's just burnt, poor guy. You know, he said there's loads of business. That's not the issue. It's just that he has found, I think, a position that offers him what he needs to live on with far less effort. And I think, you know, you could probably relate to that. You've kind of been that whole route yourself, you know, and I think he's looking forward to a more sane kind of existence rather than working 24/7.
I know he feels the same way. I loved being self-employed, and I've had a few companies in my life that I've started and run successfully, but it's a completely different dynamic than working for someone.
It can wear you right out.
Yeah, it really can.
And you know,
And
his business is very production oriented, you know what I mean? So and I don't think really it's something where he could just keep adding people to crank things out. I think there's a lot of skill involved in it to a certain degree. So it's all on him.
Yeah, it's labor intensive. There's no question about it. And I'm sorry to hear that. I'm not surprised. And I don't blame him.
I think he's in a good place about it. You know what I mean? I think he's feeling real good about it. So,
Yeah.
when he told me that there was almost no scenario where the product line wouldn't continue, I didn't mess around. As soon as I heard it, I placed a big order for stuff because I wasn't taking any chances,
Yeah.
and I hadn't actually spoken with him yet. So, just wanted to mention all of that. Jimmy's been a good buddy of ours and a friend of the show, obviously. So I thought people would be interested in hearing all about that.
I've known Jimmy for about 28 years. So, yeah, that's how far back we go.
Wow.
Well, we wish him luck. Speaking of being off the continent, I had the great fortune of crossing an item off of a bucket list.
Trip of a lifetime.
Yeah, it's one of those things, right? So, my girlfriend, now my fiance, and I, and her dad, and my fiance's sister and her boyfriend, to commemorate her dad's 70th birthday, went on one of these Band of Brothers trips, which is a tour of the greater Normandy area. But it started in London, and we toured a number of the British war museums. Excuse me, I also brought back the plague. Traveled down to Portsmouth, England, where we boarded a ferry and crossed the English Channel. And ironically, this is a guided tour. There are a number of companies that offer these tours. This one is put on by a company owned by the late Stephen Ambrose, who wrote the book Band of Brothers. And it's extremely well done. The gentleman who was our host and tour guide is a gentleman by the name of Len Fullenkamp, and I suggest you Google that name. Len is a Vietnam veteran. He's a retired Army lieutenant colonel. He was in both the 101st Airborne and the 82nd Airborne. He was a forward observer in Vietnam. He's a published author. He taught at the Naval at the Army War College. This guy has done it all, and he was absolutely fascinating. He would open up his mouth to talk, and it sounded like he was reading from a book. He could go on and on, and you were just enthralled to hear what he had to say. You can go on one of these trips by yourself, and you'll find the battlefields, and you'll find the beaches, but it's all of the backstory that you get that you would never know otherwise, that he was able to provide that really, really made it worth the time, money, and effort to do this.
Was it like
But
drinking from a fire hose in terms of quantity of in input?
very much so, and I will say that as someone who considers himself very, very knowledgeable when it comes to World War II history, there were just so much that I didn't know that this guy did. But there were a couple of really, really interesting kind of side stories to go with this. He was telling us this story about this little village in a town called Picauville, which is in Normandy. And the town was occupied by the Germans, and the Americans chased the Germans out. And it's just, when I say village, I'm talking about the length of a street that might not be a half a mile long.
Yeah, a few hundred people
Yeah,
max.
a few hundred people. So the Americans set up a small detachment there, including a medic. And one of the neighbors had two children, a 10-year-old boy and a 5-year-old boy. The 5-year-old boy contracted some, basically what amounted to a bellyache that the medic cured. But the villagers all thought that this guy was God, because they felt like he saved his life. And the Germans overran the village again. The medic was the only American soldier left in the village, and they executed him, even though he was very clearly a medic. So the 10-year-old, the 5-year-old's older brother, decided to honor the soldiers that inevitably came back and saved the village once and for all by inscribing all of their names into the stones on his 8th century Norman farmhouse.
Jeez.
So, over the course of his life, he found all of the names except the name of this medic. So while my tour guide was there on a previous tour that he was conducting with Dwight Eisenhower's granddaughter, they were talking to this gentleman, and he said, "Yeah, I just don't know this." You know, he speaks no English, but he said he just didn't know the medic's name. And Eisenhower's granddaughter turned to Len Follenkamp and said, "We're going to find out." So they did a ton of research. They found out who it was, and they came back the next time and let the guy know who it was. And this was the last name that he inscribed on the wall of his house.
Wow.
So he said, "I want to take you over to see the house now." So we went over there, and the bus, you know, this motor coach pulls up in this very narrow road, and we're standing there just gazing, amazed at this house and the work that this guy had done. There's got to be, you know, 200 names in this. There's a carving of a parachute and an airplane and all sorts of interesting information in the side of his house. And the guy comes out. He's 85 years old now. You know, so we, you know, we all, you know, kind of introduced ourselves and shook his hand. And of course, he's, you know, looking at us like, you know, get off my lawn. But
He's
so
might
that was.
must be used to it by now, though, I would think.
Well, I don't know that there's many. I think we kind of had the inside track on this piece of information because our tour guide knew of him previously.
I see.
And you know, maybe you're right, but I'm not so sure. So we got to meet this incredibly interesting guy, you know, who did all this work. And by the way, I'm in the process of editing pictures to post on Facebook. So those of you who are friends with me on Facebook will be able to see this. I shot over 300 pictures. I'm not going to post 300, but this house is in the pictures. We were at this shore battery, German shore battery, just inland from Juno Beach, which was one of the British beaches. And these the interesting fact about these guns is that they fired for about 10 minutes, and then they never fired again for the rest of D-Day. And there were four of them, and probably what persuaded the Germans to stop firing and run like hell with their tails between their legs was that a British battleship put a 15-inch round right through one of the guns
Wow.
from about, you know, 6 miles away.
Basically a lucky shot.
Yeah, I'm sure, but you know, still, that would scare the hell out of me
Oh
too.
yeah.
So, and I've got pictures of that. But while we were there, we noticed this very elderly gentleman who had a suit jacket on that was covered in British medals. So we went up and introduced ourselves, and he was one of the British soldiers that stormed Juno Beach. 93 years old.
Just happened to be touring there.
No, he was 93, so he just actually got to the beach. He was late. We, you know, we told him, you know, the war's over, but he seemed undeterred nonetheless. So yes, he was. It's not easy co-hosting the show with a real wise ass, is it? So yeah, so it was fantastic. And then one last anecdote. The people of Normandy love the Americans, Every house is decorated with American flags and French flags and Canadian flags and British flags. And we were in Saint-Mère-Église, which, if you've ever seen the movie The Longest Day,
Oh, yeah.
is where the paratrooper got hung up on the church steeple.
Actually saw that in the movie theater when it first came out with my dad.
Really?
Really?
Okay. You must have been a young.
I was pretty young, but it was a memorable experience, and I remember it.
Yeah.
Of course, I watch it on TV every once in a while when it comes around again.
Yeah. Well, two things about Saint-Mère-Église. One, that depiction is still there. They hang a dummy dressed up in an American paratrooper's uniform off of the steeple with the parachute to this day. But while we were there, because it was the anniversary, the 74th anniversary of D-Day, they had this field adjacent to the church where they had military reenactors, and all of these guys dressed up in D-Day appropriate American uniforms, and also equipment and everything. All of the people are French, portraying U.S. soldiers. So you'd walk past them and they'd be speaking French, dressed as Americans. And then lastly, if you ever wanted a Sherman tank,
And
just
who
go to Normandy.
doesn't?
Right, just go to Normandy. I must have seen 100 of them. They are everywhere. If you buy a house, they give you a Sherman tank as a move-in present, as a welcoming gift.
They get
Clearly,
lousy mileage, though.
they do. But if you get one with the 76 millimeter gun on it, then at
More
least you
than makes up for that.
good firepower. Yeah, Sherman tanks and Jeeps, they're everywhere.
And
So you know
it's probably just what you need for the Southeast Expressway.
right. Well, you might not get there quite as quickly, but
But you
although
will
actually
get there.
you might, because you can just drive over anything in front of you. So we the last night we were in Paris, and I took the opportunity while we're on the Eiffel Tower to propose to my girlfriend, and I was fortunate enough that she said yes. So
Congratulations.
it was a great trip. Great trip all
That
around.
really does put an exclamation point on everything, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And if I ever get through these pictures and get them posted, that'll be the icing on the cake.
I thought you were going to say if you ever get healthy again.
Well, that too. Honest to God, I'll tell you, it was just a painful experience for me. It hit me Friday night while I was still in Paris. And Paris is a beautiful city, by the way. Paris, and then on the plane on the way home. And there's nothing worse than flying when you've got a head cold and a
Oh,
chest cold.
I've done that. I cannot recommend it.
Yeah, no, me either. So I'm finally starting to feel better, but of course I was away from work for a week, so I'm swamped. And right before we talked, I just got a request for a bid that's due on Friday. Today is Tuesday, so life is good.
Right back in the thick of things.
Now, while I was gone, the New England Railroad Prototype Modelers Convention was held. And did you go?
I did go. I had committed to doing a clinic there, and I missed it last year, which was a shame because I had perfect attendance right up until then. But it just wasn't going to work for me last year. I was right in the middle of something. I don't know if it was layout kaboom or something. I mean, I was buried in alligators, as the saying goes. So I ended up not making it last year, and I
Yeah.
missed it, because it's really a great meet. It's my favorite meat, and it's only 2 hours from home. So it's one of those meats that I hate to miss. But as you know, and we talked about this on other shows, that when you do a lot of meats, it's possible to get kind of saturated with it. And
Oh, God, yeah.
by taking a little bit of time off, I haven't been to Coco in a few years, and I had missed the previous Malvern show, and I'd missed this NERPM show. So when I went back this year to Malvern back in March, It really it just felt good to get back out there a little bit. It felt more like normal, you know. And even though I'm in the throes of this giant project here, I realize that, you know, in some ways there's really no reason why I can't go to the meet because I'm basically coordinating, you know. I think the problem was what I was embroiled in last year, it was all me, so there were no mental cycles left. But here,
Right.
until I get my shell, you know, I'm not working up a sweat if I'm not trying to drill 19 holes in my foundation. So,
Right, exactly.
that doesn't mean that things weren't hairy here in terms of my involvement, because this is a very custom kind of project. And there are questions on a regular all-day basis and things we need to sort of reason out together, things that benefit from my input rather than somebody else just kind of making a decision on it, you know. So I need to be here. So I rescheduled my jury duty, which was going to happen this week. But before the meet, I said, look, you know, schedule me for the Saturday afternoon. I'll get there in the morning. And I'll do my thing, and I won't be there on the Friday. I figured that was a good way to get to re-enter it. So my buddy Dave Santos came with me, and we left fairly early for by my standards, and got there mid-morning. And I was determined to get through the model room this time. Because what usually happens is I get sidetracked and I start talking to the 100 different people I know there. I think I concluded I probably personally know 40% of the people or more at this meet, you know,
That's funny.
which is great to get to see these people. But if you're there to try to do anything else, it does definitely complicate it. So I made sure this time I went through the model room and at least got a glimpse of everything. And Dave Owens had asked me to give him some feedback on the changes that they had made, because the first time I went to it in Enfield was the first time they had done it there after they left Collinsville, Connecticut. And they did a good job that, you know, for a new meet in a new venue that time. But you know, some things weren't quite as optimal maybe as they could have been, particularly the way they did the model room and all that. I have to say I was really impressed with the changes that they made. They basically looked at the whole thing as a whole and said, here's what we're going to do to make it better. And you know, they hit a home run. I can honestly say that it was just fine. I couldn't offer them any constructive criticism at this point. I wouldn't change a thing. The only thing I would say is keep doing exactly what you're doing. Don't screw it up.
Well, that's good to hear.
Very well attended. I think they broke their previous attendance records and all of that. So they're clearly hitting on all cylinders.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. Dave works hard at that. He's done it for a long time, and he deserves to have a lot of success. I know he doesn't do anything halfway. And I know that your input to him was probably very critical. So I'm glad you were able to do that. I'm glad you were able to go back down there. And I hope at some point, before I'm too old to enjoy it, and I feel there are days I feel like I'm getting to that point, that I can go back down there too. But I hope everyone understands. I was in France.
Exactly. It's a pretty good excuse.
It is a good excuse. So I was storming the beaches of Normandy.
Right. And how often do you get to do that, really?
So, well, and I'm looking forward to posting these pictures. And I think one of the things that you'll notice with regards to some of the battlefield pictures is just the might of the United States military. There are some pictures taken from Pointe du Hoc, which was supposedly a German cannon, long gun, howitzer facility. And the guns weren't actually there, but there were a lot of German soldiers up there. And the American battleships just pounded this place. And you can't step on flat ground anymore up there. The bomb craters are Well, and I'm sure that, they've filled in to some degree. It's been 74 years, but they're 20 feet deep and about 35 to 40 feet across.
Well, when you think they hurl those shells literally for miles.
Oh yeah, they were, they were 4 or 5 miles offshore.
The impact, even if they don't explode, must be amazing.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. And you look at the bomb craters and you think, well, all right, it's a big hole in the ground. Well, all the dirt and rocks and everything that made up that hole is now, in the air
Elsewhere,
someplace
yeah.
else. Yeah. Just amazing. So glad to be home anyway.
I'll bet.
Yep. So we will reconvene in July, Mike.
Yeah, now July is going to be another heavy duty month here. My son's planning on coming up from Florida for most of the month, and he brings with him quite a bit of energy, so
Yes, he does, as young people tend to.
Oh, yes.
So all of that is good. So we'll look forward to talking next month and get another update on the progress of the construction.
Absolutely. Good to have you back, and congratulations.
Thanks again, Mike.